to the Radio Life Sciences Podcast for a behind-the-scenes look into GSLS, made by students and educators for the scientists of tomorrow.
Hi everyone, Tessa here, and welcome to an episode of Research in the Jungle series of the Radio Life Sciences Podcast. In this two-part series, we talk about doing research far away from home in the tropics. Today, I am here with Julia Blok, who is a master's student of Ecology and Natural Resource Management.
Hi, hello everyone.
And Ronja Knippers, who is doing a PhD on human-wildlife coexistence and many other things.
Yes, hi.
Both at the University of Utrecht. Ronja, Julia, thank you for joining me today. Can you explain what your research was about?
Yes, sure. So I did research in Suriname, and there I studied the relationships between ecosystem services, so the products or the services an ecosystem provides humanity with, and then also diversity, so species richness in my case, so how many species there were, and then specifically for plants.
Okay. Can you tell me a bit more? Like, what does it work? How does it work like? Can you paint me a picture?
Yeah, sure. So in the beginning, we walked transects, so lines through Paperboat. That's the park where we did our studies. And then we looked at the abundant plant species, so we could divide the area in main vegetation types. And then for each type, we did carbon plots. So we did plots of 20 meters by 20 meters. And then for this plot, we looked at every tree or like a resident palm, so like very big palms that were of a certain size. And then we measured them, and we also noted down which species they were.
Oh, okay. And why is this important research?
Because we want to know if nature areas can have both a very high species richness or diversity and also simultaneously have a high carbon storage. So you can like protect both services at the same time if these align.
Sounds very interesting. We'll come back to this. Ronja, what are you doing?
Yeah, I am doing my PhD. I am currently in my second year. It's also in Suriname. And my PhD is on the social ecological system of human-wildlife conflict with crop raiders, which is a whole mouthful. But what it basically means is that I'm trying to look at the complete system, so that means the social sciences side and the biological sciences side, of how people and animals, wild animals, interact in Suriname. And the animals that I'm looking at are crop raiders, which is animals that come to crop fields to either trample or eat or destroy in any way crops. So you can imagine that people don't appreciate this usually, which leads or can lead to something called human-wildlife conflict. And what I'm trying to do is by looking at this whole system, so that means what are these animals doing, what are they damaging, what are they eating, why are they coming to the crop fields, are they influenced by predators, by food availability, where are these animals? So this is why I'm using something called camera traps, which are like remote triggered cameras that you can put in the forest or anywhere else really, and they will just take pictures whenever something walks by. And I'm also investigating how people interact with wildlife, so I'm using interviews, surveys, and trying to basically get a picture of the whole system holistically to understand how it works, so we can form building blocks for mitigation measures to resolve conflict, hopefully.
Sounds both as wonderful projects to work on. What made you decide to research this far away from home in the tropics?
Well, I really like tropical ecosystems, and I think they're one of the most diverse systems on Earth, so also very important to protect and to study them. So like a combination of that I think it's really needed to study them, but also that I really like the ecosystems and the plants there.
Yeah, it's the same for me with the added point that especially Suriname and the Guianas is very understudied, so there's very little research from this region. Actually, there's probably people listening to this podcast don't know where Suriname is, especially if you're not Dutch. Like, it's a super unknown, to us at least, part of the world. And to scientists as well. So there's very little publications coming from Suriname specifically, but also from the broader Guianas.
Okay. And that's why you're doing this. That's really nice. Yeah. And is there any difference in the research that you are able to do in the Netherlands as opposed to there? And I don't mean the plants and animals, et cetera, that are there. Of course, it makes sense. Ecosystem is different. And are there other ways of researching available, or other techniques, other prerequisites? What does it look like? And what are the differences?
Well, I think for me, the main differences are the field conditions, because like for doing plots, it's pretty much the same measuring a tree in the Netherlands or there. But it's like the temperature is much higher. There are a lot of mosquitoes, which like distract you from the work. And then also it rained quite a lot, which is also difficult if you use paper to write things on, for example. So I think the temperatures and the climate is the main difference for me.
Yeah. So to understand you perfectly, you're talking about plots, which are areas that you are researching in, a block on a map, which you're doing your research in. And are you there every day, every week? How often are you there?
We were mostly 4 days a week in the fields, so quite a lot.
Yeah, in this heat that you mentioned.
Yeah, it was like in the beginning, in the first week, it was the worst because then you have to like acclimatize to it. But then after a week or two, it gets better and it's okay.
Nice. And for how many weeks or months did you stay in Suriname?
For 2.5 months.
Oh, okay. And you?
Right now, I'm doing 3 months here, 3 months there for like 2 years.
Oh, so, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I'm in the field a lot. So yeah. I know what Julia's talking about. The conditions are harsh. And one time you'll go and it's dry season, it'll be 45 degrees literally every day, and it will never rain. And it'll be so dry and so hot. Like, we will have to work on these crop fields, which obviously like are open under the sun, really. And you'd have to do 10 minutes of work. Then you have to sit in the shade with your head between your knees for 5 minutes to recuperate. And then you go back into the field. And that's how we do the field work in the dry season. And in the wet season, it's always raining. And when it's raining very hard, you can't do the work either. So, yeah, it's a... There's some complications that you wouldn't necessarily have to the same amount when you would do your field work here, for example. Although you could definitely apply all the same methods to the Netherlands, for example, as well.
And do you have any special tips and tricks that you use to adapt to that way of doing field work?
No, it gets easier.
Okay.
Start really, really, really early. So if we're doing research on the crop fields and we know it's going to be a sunny day, we try to get there by 6 or 7 in the morning so we can leave by noon, because it's especially between 12 and 4. You just really don't want to be outside. It's horrifying. And during the wet season, it's the other way around. You sort of wait until the rain goes away. It usually rains in the morning. Then it's usually dry-ish for the midday, and then it starts raining again in the afternoon. So you just have to know your windows.
Mm. Right.
Yeah, in Paperpot we had a lot of shade from the trees. We didn't have open fields, so that was better. But for us, the mosquitoes were the main thing. So we used a lot of date in the beginning, but then your skin starts to get irritated. So we switched to krapau oil, which people said would help, but it did help a bit, but not that much.
I have the same experience. Helps a bit for the agouti lice. I don't know if you had those in Paperpot.
No, we didn't.
Okay,
so
bless,
we were lucky.
Lice, mosquitoes. What else did you encounter?
We encountered some snakes, which was nice, the Boothrops atrox, which is a venomous snake, but if you don't step on it, it's fine.
Yeah, which is true for basically every snake.
Yeah,
fair. Still, sounds pretty dangerous.
If you pay attention, I think it's okay, but you have to pay attention. Like, it's not the same as rummaging through a field here, and the worst thing that can happen is getting a tick.
Right.
And you will get ticks, but other things as well.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, you have to be okay with creepy crawlies and everything related, and snakes, and because you'll see them, and there's venomous spiders, and you will see them, and there's bullet ants, which I don't know if you know what a bullet ant is, but it's a really big ant, and if it stings you, it's excruciating pain for 48 hours. You can actually like go in a coma from, but there are some things to keep in mind while you're walking through the forest.
Okay, and you're doing research in an area where a lot of locals live, or it's their country, to say. Mm. Are you working with them to do research?
So we worked with the park management of Paperpot, and they helped us a lot. And we also worked with the National Herbarium of Suriname, so they joined us in the field. But other than that, we mostly explained to locals what we were doing if we saw them walking in the park.
Yeah, I am working in villages, and I'm working in the forest that is part of the territory of the tribes that I am I'm working with. So I'm on their land, and these villages, they are, some of them are indigenous and some of them are Maroon. And I'm also, like I said before, working together with these people to collect data on how they experience and perceive their interactions with wild animals. So I'm often in the village collecting social data. So not only in the forest.
Yeah.
Do you like it both equally or?
Yes, both is so fun in a different way. The forest is like super exciting and you never know what you're going to see. Like you might go into the forest just to do a plot on your plans, mm-hmm. but you might see really cool animals while you're doing it, or like a really, really cool plant or something like that. So it's, you never know what's going to happen. And the work in the villages is different because you mostly know what's going to happen, but it's exciting in another way because you're learning about people's practices, people's culture, people's daily lives, which are in some ways extremely similar to ours, which is crazy, but also very different in other ways. And it's very exciting to learn about these
Do you name an example?
So all people there have a smartphone. Mm-hmm. So imagine you have a plot of forest. Trees have been taken away and it's mostly white sand or like yellowish sand that's underneath the soil. And then they built their own houses, usually from wood, but some of them are more so houses we would see here as well, like brick houses. But all very simple. People usually live from hunting, from their crop fields. They might have like a side job that they do for 1 or 2 days a week. And they have very little income, like the mean income in, I think that's Suriname as a whole, so that includes Paramaribo, which where the income, of course, very much higher. There's much
main
more
city, yeah.
Work there than there is in the small villages, but a mean income of something like 300 or 400 euros a month. Mm-hmm. So it's very low compared to the Netherlands, but people have smartphones, all of them. Like that is the number one priority, material-wise, is to have a smartphone. So in that, and they are on Facebook, they're on Instagram. Like I have so many of them on Facebook, on WhatsApp. So in that regard, like we are living very similar lives, but the way in which they live their daily life, which is going to the crop fields, working there, almost every day, except of course Sunday, which they are, most of the villages that I'm working in are Christian, so they go to church on Sundays, and Sundays is a rest day. But the way in which they use their, what we would call working day, is extremely different from ours, and they work with the seasons. Like we said about field work, you have to go with the flow, with the heat, with the rain. And they also do that, so they live very differently from us.
Yeah, and just something that popped into mind, did you say that they sometimes hunt? Is that... I can imagine that there are scenarios in which this hunting conflicts your interest in doing the wildlife research, or am I mistaken?
No, you are very much not mistaken. I think conflicts, maybe not the right word, because the people that live in these villages, they hunt for subsistence. So they hunt to eat, and there's not a store there where you can buy your piece of meat or anything. So for them, it's mostly a necessity.
I'm not saying it is.
No,
I can imagine that for you, Bridget, and their livelihood is different interests.
Yeah. So that's true. So these are, they don't always get along.
How do you deal with that as a researcher?
Well, first of all, I think it's important not to go into a village like that and have the idea that you are going to be able to change people's practices that they've had for hundreds or thousands of years, and try to let that more westernized mindset leave it like behind a little bit and be more open to what the people there can teach you and show you. But still, of course, the hunting is impacting animal populations. So I am looking at, or the point of my research project is in the end to have these building blocks for human-wildlife coexistence. So that's basically the antagonist of human-wildlife conflict. To go towards this coexistence where you will still have hunting, but it won't affect the populations of these animals in a way that can hurt the ecosystem, basically. Right. Yeah. So that is sort of the goal.
Okay. That sounds like a challenge, but a fun one. Yeah,
it's definitely a challenge. And I mean, my project alone will not be able to achieve this, especially not if you're looking at a global scale. So first steps, baby steps.
Right. And Julia, can we go back to your tree implant project, say? Can you share any results that have come out of this project? Maybe not your own, or maybe someone else's in the project you're working on.
Yes, so we expected to find positive relationships between the diversity and the carbon storage based on like research in primary forests, because paperpot is a regenerating forest. But we found that these relationships are largely absent. Okay. So we hypothesized that the vegetation might be too young for these relationships to show.
Right.
But then we do want to add for like policymakers that it's still very important to regenerate those forests, as these relationships will appear when the forests get older. And also because the diversity is already very high, because paperpot was previously a plantation, like coffee and cacao plantations.
Okay.
So in 25 years, there's already a lot of diversity now.
So are they trying to help the regeneration, or is this like they're just letting it be and seeing what happens?
They're just letting it be and then maintaining walking paths, because they also want the local people to be able to enjoy the nature there. So a very small part of the park is with walking paths and actually a canoe trail, which is really nice.
Oh, that sounds good. Yeah. And you, Ronja, already mentioned that you were going back to Suriname in a few weeks or months.
Yeah.
Julia, would you ever go back to do research?
I really want to go back. I want to write a PhD proposal and then maybe for research in French Guiana.
Oh,
probably.
Right. Yeah.
And then something again with plants, because I really like plants.
Yeah. Really nice. Yeah. So can you paint me a picture? What is it like to be in a jungle all day?
It's really cool, just being among very big trees that reach very tall, and then all those layers of green which are there, because it's not only the trees, it's also like calatheas, like very small plants, and then like epiphytes on the trees, and then just green all around you, and you hear birds the whole day and making amazing noises, and then sometimes you see them and then you're like really happy because you finally see them. And then there's an agouti running past if you're really lucky, or monkeys joining you. So it's really cool.
Yeah, I think it's really hard to describe when you've never been what a wet rainforest is like. It's really crazy. It's very overwhelming in every sense. Like there's sounds, it smells of everything. You smell animals, you smell flowers, you see all kinds of things, cool plants, fruits, you'll see animals, birds overhead, really, really cool insects that you've never seen. You'll see new things every time. And then there's the heat, so you're like, and the mosquitoes. So it's very overwhelming.
True. Yeah, but in a positive way.
In a positive way. At least for me, I mean. I can only speak for myself. But yeah, definitely in a positive way. You can really fall in love with it.
Right, right. So I'm curious about the research. How do you decide what your research is going to be? How do you decide where to look for things that you're looking for?
For me, it was quite easy because I do a project with Gijs Steur at the Botanic Gardens, and he already had an idea about doing research at paperpot and what the subject would be. So I actually joined him.
Yeah, the choice for Suriname in general... I mean, these choices can depend on many things, and usually it's people that are involved in your project have experience there, which is the case for me, that one of my supervisors has worked in Suriname for like 15 years, so she's very much so has a network there. And we were thinking about other countries as well, but then there was political instability and mm-hmm. there's all these things going on. And it's the sad truth that many countries that have tropical forest are experiencing political instability or other issues that can mm-hmm. make conducting research really hard or sometimes dangerous. So you have to make choices in that regard.
Right.
Suriname is doing reasonably well.
Sounds like you had a good time there. Yeah. Are there any other anecdotes about your research you would like to share?
That is such a hard question because I have spent almost 7 months now in Suriname. So that's such a long time. So many things have happened.
Okay, maybe then a more easy question. What was the coolest animal, plant, anything ecological you can think of that you experienced?
We saw a Guianan red howler monkey in the forest. So at first we heard them a lot, like that these are very big red monkeys and they make a very hard like noise. And then you hear them a lot, but we never saw them. And then one day we were walking there and Sonne, the fellow student, she looked up and then she was like, ah, there's a howler monkey. And he was just quietly sitting in the crown of a tree.
Oh,
that's so cool.
Very cool to finally see him.
Yeah,
after yeah, because you hear them for so long.
Yeah,
yeah, I have seen many an animal, but on
is
my
it
last
left
field...
to pick one.
Yes, one. Oh, dear. Well, during my last field trip, we were in one of the villages that I'm working in, and we were quite deep into the forest, like 5 or 6 kilometers from the nearest river. And there was a pack of peccaries. So peccaries are relatives of the pigs, but slightly different. South American pigs, if you will. Boar. And they come in really, really big groups. So it was like 30 or 40 of them. And they are not afraid of humans.
So is there, I can imagine there's listeners who are interested in these topics and want to know more about it, or maybe want to do research themselves in mm-hmm. these areas. What would you say to those listeners? Tips?
Yeah, I would say once you have the opportunity of a thesis or an internship or something, and you know that you want to do research in, for example, the tropical rainforest, you just have to go there. Because, like I said, it's very hard to explain what it's like. You have to experience it at least once to also know if it's the thing for you, because not all students love it. Like, they will go and they'll be like, that was super intense. No, thank you. I'll, like, do some nice research in Europe, for example, which is so fair. And there is lots of research projects at Utrecht, at other universities that are going to these places, and especially PhD students like me, they always need students to go along, almost always. So email them and ask, when is the next field trip and do you need any students?
Yeah, I would indeed just look at the research groups and see which PhD candidates are there and what their topics are, or maybe professors or assistant professors.
Yeah, it's usually the PhDs going on field work. Yeah.
Nice. I want to thank you for being here today. It was really interesting to hear about your research experiences. Quite a unique story. And thank you. And thank you all for listening.